Welcome to Voices Unveiled, a podcast where we explore the stories of internationally educated newcomers here in Minnesota. I'm your host, Halima Hamid.
Discourage. I mean, sometimes it can be a hard path, but enjoy the walk first. Enjoy the walk.
Today, we have the privilege of hearing the story of Melissa Rieger, who has a Master of Science degree and is a medical doctor. Hi, Melissa. Could you share with our listeners what place or location you consider as home?
So the thing is, I'm always been an immigrant because I live in these very different countries all my life since I was 2 years old. So my home actually is not a place, you know, like a country. I've always felt home where my family was, wherever that place was. Mm-hmm. If my family was there, that was home, no matter what country we were in.
I totally get that. And I think it's the same thing for me.
Yeah.
And similar for people who have refugee and immigrant background. It's, well, home didn't feel like home. It doesn't feel like home anymore when you come to a new place.
Yeah.
Because there's usually nothing. I was born in a refugee camp. And so there's no home there no more. So
Yeah, no.
There's no physical home. It's just having to build my new home here. So reflecting on your education that you had from bachelor's to master's, all the degrees that you had, what did you specialize in?
When I did my graduate studies, let's say, I did med school in Colombia, so medicine. And then my master's was in biomedical research. And my PhD was in molecular oncology. So I did research in oncology, especially lymphomas, hematological malignancies.
How long was your PhD?
I finished in 2014 before I came here to the United States. Yeah. Wow. And that was in Spain. But that's not a normal, like, I wouldn't say normal, but yeah, let's say normal. The normal pathway of a physician.
I see.
A physician would do, would finish their med school and then go into residency and then specialize in something like medical, you know, internal medicine or family medicine, oncology, or, you know, like pediatrics or traumatology, general surgery, you know. But it's, I wouldn't say weird, but it's not the common path of a physician to, after graduating, you know, a medical school, to go into research. And then, more crazy enough, to go back to the clinic, you know, like say, hey, I want to do clinic again. So that's my pathway has been that way. Like I did my medical school, then I did research for, 8 years or so. And then I wanted to go back to the clinical side of things.
What did your decision look like from master's, when you did your master's, to PhD?
So at that time in Spain, in order to do a PhD, you needed to do a master's. So when I finished my med school, I loved everything about medicine. If someone asked, what do you want to do? I couldn't specify which. Well, maybe internal medicine because it's broad and you do everything, like, you know, everything, you know, but I didn't have like a special thing, you know. And it's not that I'm against specifics, but I've always loved the broad view, let's say, like to know about everything, you know, like those kinds of, like Aristotle, Socrates, you know, that they knew about everything, right? So that's what I loved about like internal medicine or those kind of things. So when they proposed to me, why don't you do research, you know, as just a clerkship, like a rotation in research in the last 6 months of my internship in medical school. Then I said, well, yeah, I mean, why not? In medical school, they push so much for research, how research is the key, you know, for your patients, you know, for progress in medicine, you know, but you don't actually have much time to actually do research, right?
When you go to clinicals.
Yeah, because we always are seeing patients, right? Yeah. We are getting, you know, honed in our clinical skills. So when I had those months, I went to Spain. I did some research and I liked it. And then they offered me, do you want to do your PhD here? But before that, you have to do a master's. So I graduated from school, and that's how I entered into my master's in Spain. I went back to Spain and I did my master's in biomedical research, and then the PhD in the lab where I had the experience beforehand. That it was a lab of hematology malignancies.
What is that, may I ask?
It's in Pamplona. It's at the University of Navarra. It's called CIMA, Center for Applied Medical Research. Mm. It's just in front of the university clinic of the...
What about your research?
So my research was, as I mentioned before, it's it was in a hematological malignancy laboratory. My PI, my principal investigator, was focused in lymphomas. So my research was in resistance, therapeutic resistance seen in patients, you know, with the chemotherapy, you know, two type of lymphoma, B-cell lymphoma. So I studied what was the cause of the resistance to this chemotherapy in this type of B-cell lymphoma. Because once you understand what's the mechanism behind, you know, what the tumor uses to avoid chemotherapy, then you can create new therapeutic to jump across that barrier. So you create a new pathway to kill the tumor.
Is that a research focus or area you still like to do or work in once you have your residency?
Yeah, well, I love research, like molecular research, therapeutics in medicine has developed a lot, even when sometimes we hear the word cancer and it seems that we have the same tools to treat it, but we actually don't. Like before, we just bombarded, you know, we just put bombs in the patient in order to kill the tumor, but we killed everything. Mm-hmm. And with time, everything started to be more target. So I love all the research behind the target therapeutics. I love that. However, the clinical side of oncology, it's a very tough one. You know, like the bedside, like being with the oncology patient, you know, kids who have lymphomas, you know, adults who have cancer. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not a terminal disease, but many cases it's a terminal disease. Mm-hmm. And emotionally, I think it's it has a lot of burden. So in that sense, I like more the preventive part of medicine, you know, and that's what I like about family medicine. That's why if I have the chance to do a residency here in the United States, I would like to focus in family medicine. And if I have an opportunity to do research and to continue to do research in not only in molecular oncology, but in target therapeutic for any other disease, rheumatological disease, that would be great. Wow. That would be awesome. Yeah.
I don't want you to use the if
phrasing
because I want you to use when, because it will happen. I'm manifesting it for you. It will 100% happen. You have so much experience and so much to contribute.
Yeah.
And I really see this happening.
You see it?
No ifs. That's good.
yes. No, you know, I think sometimes we are very naive. Like I was very naive and I thought things are very straightforward. Mm-hmm. But life is not like that. Life has ups and downs and has A, B, C, D, E, and Z plan, you know?
Right.
And the important, I think, is like to enjoy the pathway while you're doing it, but keeping your mind on your goal all the time, you know? Sometimes there is rush, right? Because you have, for example, to support a family, right? Like, you know, if you're an refugee or immigrant, right? Mm-hmm. And you've done all this experience work outside and you come here to the United States and you have a family to support. You want to work in what you have, right? work before. But then other times there is no rush in the sense that, as you say, you can reach the goal. And it doesn't matter if you reach it when you are 20, 30, 50, 60, or 70. I mean, we hope we can get right. before, right?
Right.
But I think life is different than what sometimes we think it is. It's just results now. We like to see results now. Like, for example, I want to be a family physician, right? Mm. So you work for it, you know, you knock the doors, and eventually you are going to be there. Mm-hmm. When you really don't know, because it's not under your control, right?
Right?
It's something bigger than you. But the important thing is that in the process, you learn so many things about yourself. So personal gain for yourself, for your family, for your children. Society-wise, you learn lots of things, you know, and you contribute. Like, imagine if you think about it, like if I had entered a residency program when I just arrived in 2015, I wouldn't be here today talking with you.
Since 2015 was the first thing I want to get residency here. What was the goal like?
My goal was to enter residency here.
So since 2015,
yeah,
till now you are trying.
I've been working on it.
Mm.
So yeah, that's how, 10 years, more or less, yeah. Because I arrived here, I finished my PhD in 2014, yeah.
How close are you when you're done with this program? Is it exam or is it finding a clinic to take you on?
Finding a match.
A match.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you apply and you do interviews, you know, to the different programs.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then an algorithm tells you, oh, you are a match for this program, because they put you first and you put the program first too.
I see.
Yeah.
When does that start?
I'll say it's very clean without bias, because it's an algorithm, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So that they tell you that on March.
So you start the process in March, or they tell you if you're a match by March?
Yeah, they tell you if you have a match in March. Yeah, and then you start in June.
You start the residency.
Yeah, in June. If you have matched to a program, you start in June. So the path or the advice is like to put your name in as many hats as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, like all United States, if you can, so that then it's more plausible that you get a match.
At least one.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I only target, you know,
Minnesota.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because my family is here, so. I mean, I like it here too. I mean, it's not just because.
it's a nice state.
Yeah.
One question that I always ask my participants is, using the five senses, describe to me your first day in the U.S., five senses being vision, hearing, touching, smell, and taste.
It was October, almost Halloween. Mm. Yes, yeah. We travel on the 29th and we arrive on the 30th of November of 2014. And it was gray outside because it was almost winter. I mean, the leaves were all already, you know,
a little chilly.
Yeah, it was cold.
Oh.
Well, cold for me because, you know, beforehand I lived in Barcelona that you had like 21 Celsius.
Paradise.
So for me it was cold. So I remember the weather being gray and cold. But also I remember warmth because the people who were waiting for me at the airport were my parents and my brother.
Mm.
So they were really, really happy, you know, that I was coming to live, not just to visit, you know, but to stay to live here.
Wow.
So the warmth of their smiles, let's say, yeah. The warmth of their hugs, you know, say, yeah, you're here to live, to stay, right? The smell of home-cooked meal, you know, like when we arrived home and it was, my mom had some meal prepared, you know, a special meal.
What was it? What meal?
I don't remember now, but I remember it must be, my mom loves chicken with rice, so probably it was something on that, you know, side. And the taste, I don't know, the taste, that everything, well, that's not a taste, but I nothing else comes to mind. But the new beginnings, you know, like everything was possible. You know, when you like, yeah. when you start reading a book and you open it and yeah. it's like, I don't know this story. Something's going to happen now, but I don't know what's going to be, right?
It's exciting.
So it's like exciting, the taste of excitement, or I don't know, like thrilling.
I can resonate with that, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
That's definitely a taste. It's definitely
at
a
least
taste.
Coca-Cola wants us, you know, like every time, you know, like an announcement of Coca-Cola is like everything's possible. I mean, yeah. there's cheers and everything, you know. Yeah. So yeah, probably it's a taste, new beginnings. Yeah.
You said that you like broad focus. You don't like a narrow something.
Yeah.
And in terms of research or focus area for your majors, I want to know why you got into medicine, or like what is the inspiration? And then what is helping you continue till now? Because you could have focused on something else, or you could have done, took on another path, but you're still in it, you know, since 2014. So why did you get into it? And then what is keeping you, helping you stay motivated?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, because motivation is very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. My brother, I have two older brothers. They are twins from the Twin Cities, actually. They were born here, yeah. So one of them decided to go into medicine. And then I said, oh, well, if that could be an option, right? Because that it has like biology, and that has also the helping people part.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was my turn to, you know, after 6 years, because we have 6 years apart from, you know, myself and my brothers, when I have to choose for a career, I looked into, you know, biology, nursing, dentistry, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I knew I like biological sciences. And then when I had the experience in medicine, seeing my brother, and then, you know, when you go to talks, you know, with people that tell you about, I just loved how you could actually help people, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, I love animals too, but I love the idea of just being part of someone's life that I really like the idea, you know.
Yeah.
So that's how I went into medicine, and I really enjoyed, you know, seeing patients and helping them in, you know, the little that I can do for them,
mm-hmm.
and you know, all the things that I learned from them, you know, like compassion.
Yes, definitely.
So many
a
things.
Two-way.
Yeah, it's really a two-way. I think you learn more, you know, you're more happy when you give yourself mm-hmm. than when you receive. That's definitely. And with patients, you receive so much from them. You learn so much about the human condition, you know, like very tough things sometimes, but at the same time, joyous things, because patients are so grateful, even when you just do a very little thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed that of medicine. And when I was in research, I missed that, you know, I missed being
human connection.
Yes, yes, you know, just not being with cells. I was like, I'm worried about these cells. I'm changing the culture medium of cells, lymphoma cells that, yeah, of course, you know, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like they were important, you know, for research, but in, you know, in the whole spectrum of things, you know, I really miss like talking with patients and helping them in very little ways, you know, but I miss that human connection. And that's why I wanted to go back to the clinic. So when I came to the United States, I already knew that I wanted to focus on getting my residency, because that was the pathway in order to, if I wanted to practice medicine again. Because I could have done research, right? I could do, you know, lab technician, do a postdoc after my PhD. I had opportunities to do a postdoc, but I wanted to see patients again. And I would say my story is not the typical story of any, you know, of international medical graduates. I have friends from my school, medical school, that they came here, and after 3-4 years, they were able to too much to our residency program, and they have finished, you know, their pediatrics, you know, the one is a pediatrician, neonatologist, actually, other one is a cardiologist. My case, it's a bit particular because I had kids in between, you know, so I became a mom while I was studying. So that, you know, that's life, right? So I would say the thing that kept me going, apart from the support of my family, you know, my husband saying when I was like, no, I hate this. There's so many shut doors, you know, there. And I just don't want to knock. I will go and work in a McDonald's. I don't mind. I mean, just to, you know, I would say it's the support of my family that kept, you know, the North like, but you want to help. You could be a great doctor. That's what they said. It's not that I feel like I'm going to be a great doctor. That's what my husband was saying. You could be a great doctor who could help so many people. And that's the thing that motivated me, like the people that I could help at some point in my life.
I definitely see what you're talking about. I think it brings a lot of authenticity to your relationships. It's also about the space that you're in. For example, your work, like, does it curate the energy, the space for you to have these conversations with your coworker? Yeah. Or is it a very toxic place that you rather have a lunch in front of your computer rather than talking to your coworker?
Yeah.
So it's cultivating the space so that people can have human interactions.
Yes.
And people can have authentic relationships. Definitely see that point that you're making. What advice would you tell to people who are international trained, people who have come here as a refugee but do have the experiences and the certificates and like a lot of educational background and really want to, you know, are looking for like a specific job that they want to contribute in but are facing barriers, as is the case for all individual that do come here with foreign degrees? What advice would you share? As somebody who's going through the process and almost done, what sort of advice or wisdom would you share with them?
Well, I would say, I don't know if it's wisdom. I don't think I'm a wise person. But I would say first, don't get discouraged. I mean, sometimes it can be a hard path, but enjoy the walk first. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the walk. Then try to knock on the right places, because then you ask me, okay, which one is the right place, right? Well, for example, in my case, I never thought about me as a physician going to the Minnesota Department of Health in, you know, Minnesota, to the office, to say, hey, what options are there for me? Never thought about that until I went online, Googled, and I found Bridge Program, and they had an informative session, and then someone from the Minnesota Department of Health said, oh yeah, and these are all the resources we have for international medical graduates, by the way. And I was like, oh, I could do my first examination with you guys, with the help of you guys. So I don't know, like if you're a physician, go to the Minnesota, well, yeah, you're in Minnesota, go to the Minnesota Department of Health, knock the door, say, hey, what can I do? How am I useful? What options are here for me? Try to knock on the right places. And then if you are able to work around, like, for example, I know many people who, like in my field, who want to enter medicine, you know, like the medical background. And then they are medical interpreters, for example. Like, so that way you get to
still be in the field.
But, and at the same time, learn a bit about the system, right? So try to stay in the field somehow. Like, don't go to McDonald's. Like, I mean, not don't go to my, like, remember I was saying, like, when I was discouraged, I was saying, like, oh, no, I will go and work on McDonald's, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's lovely people who work there. But that's not my field, right? So my
You're
field
not
is...
getting to use the skills that you have.
Exactly.
And I think starting with the entry position or something close to what you were doing can really help you make those connections. Because as you mentioned, the network is really important. And
yes.
Once you start building that network, then you can, you know, go up to a point that you can claim the degree that you were doing back home, claim your experience and career.
Exactly, yeah.
What I know from you, what you have told me so far, is you're in a 9-month program here in Minnesota trying to earn your residency or trying to start residency.
Yeah, correct. It's a 9-month program that is between the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota Department of Health. Mm-hmm. It's called Bridge Program for Residency. And it's basically a 9-month externship of clinical clerkships when you have hands-on experience with patients. And the goal of this program is basically to bridge the gap that there is for international medical graduates that come to the States and that want to practice, but they encounter many barriers to practice because they don't know the American health system, you know, all the administrative things or part of the system, but also how it works in the clinical setting, let's say. The language, you know, the all those barriers that exist and that when you want to match to a residency program, program directors are like, who are you? Where do you come from? Where have you practiced medicine, right? So this program is 9 months where you practice medicine under the supervision of mentors, very good, clinically skilled doctors, physicians.
What are the more specific barriers that you have faced when you were trying to, well, navigate residency?
Yeah, so when I wanted to enter a residency program, one of them, not only myself, but the people that I know, international medical graduates, is the length, like the time that you have to take in order to be able to match a program, because you have to do several exams, at least three. Well, it's two, but one, the second one is separated into two parts. Mm-hmm. So it's actually three exams. The third examination, you can take it on your first year of residency, but many international medical graduates prefer to do it before matching to our program, just because it gives you like a heads up in the competition with American graduates, medical graduates, right? So one would be that, like when you have practiced long time outside the United States, and then you come here and you have to do all these exams, that's like the pathway is long. And then also the way of doing things too, it's different, you know, maybe the basics is not, but here the relationship between physicians and patients, it's more, let's say, leveled rather than other countries. The physician has still some, it's not that here they don't have authority, they do have authority, but for patients in other countries, the what the doctor says, you know, it's like almost God's word, right? Wow. Well, whether here it's more like a conversation with the patient, like, do you think it's a good idea to do this? You know, it's more like a teamwork.
Is the content different when you were taking the exams or
no?
Trying?
No, the content I would say is the same. You know, luckily, thank God. You know, I believe mostly in Occidental, you know, medicine practice is the same, but for example, pharmaceutical names are different. The brands
I see
are different. Also, terminology, medical terminology in Spanish is very different, you know, than in English. And then the health system per se, you know, when you come from social-based medical system to a private medical system, things are quite different, you know. Expenses are different. You have to, you know, in order to help the patient, you need to know how the health system works in every place you are, right? Wow.
The program that you're in right now, what is the, like, any key elements? What activities that you're focusing on? What are those?
Yeah, so we do the first 6 months or so. I believe it's like six months. So the first 6 months is just theoretical. So we take a course in the social determinants of health in Minnesota, you know, to learn about the communities, to learn about the inequities that are going to be part of the health system that we're going to work with here in Minnesota. So it was really interesting course. And there were not only physicians in that course. There were lawyers, there were nutritionists, there were, you know, like all spectrum.
I see.
Yeah, undergraduates, you know, that they were doing, you know, at the U of M, some social work, social workers, massage, you know, people who do massage, you know, like very, you know, broad people who want to learn about nurses too. Yeah. And there was someone studying for nursing, and that they want to know about, yeah, the social determinants of health.
And from your experience with this program and the experience that you had while being here after you arrived, what do you think are the policy shift or programming that we need to focus on so that educated and experienced people like you don't have to spend so much time doing something that you've already done, doing exams that you have already done, so things that are making it easier for you to find jobs that really match your skills and your experience, and that sees your international experience as a strength, right?
Yeah.
Not as lacking, not as a weakness, but a strength that you have this, you know, various of experience, various of cultural experience, and now you're here, right?
Yeah.
What do you think those policy shift or missing resources that we could focus on?
When we talk about these things, I believe you have to be, like, you have to put yourself in the shoes of both parts, right? Of the person who comes here as an international medical graduate, in my case, right? Mm-hmm. But also in the shoes of the people who run the things here, right? Like, for example, the Minnesota Department of Health, right? Or the American Association of Physicians, right? Mm-hmm. And not only here in America, but, you know, like in Chile, like where I'm from, or in Spain, you know, or in Europe, whatever. Every place has their own institutions that want to warrant that things are well done, right?
Right.
And that everything runs smooth, and that people who work in their country are not a menace, but are actually qualified, you know, to
setting,
do so.
Setting quality standards.
Yeah, that I believe it's important. Like, if I'm in the shoes of, you know, of these people who have the power to do these policies or quality standards. So they have to, there has to be some way to prove that you are qualified, right? The only thing I wonder sometimes if it's, like, if you have to put a lot of barriers or just, like, minimize, let's say. Like, for example, you can ask for the diploma, you know, the background, like, you know, like the CV when they ask you all the, you know, your notes, everything. You could go through a process of homologation, right? Like, for example, I did in Spain. My medical title is homologated in Spain. So you had to do lots of paperwork of all the subjects you did, you know, all your grades, everything. And they took all that and then they analyzed it in a administrative level. And then they said, yes, after 7 months or so, yes, your title, it's like your Colombian med school title is like being graduated here in Spain.
Okay.
So then you are at the same level. You don't have to wait, like, I don't know how many years, you know.
A lot of years.
And then over there, for example, in Spain, you just take one exam. That is the same exam that all medical graduates do at the end of their medical school. Mm-hmm. They take one exam. It's called MIR, M-I-R. And then that's it, right? But usually medical graduates, that they do... they go into, like, academies after they graduate and they study 6 months in those academies and then they present the MIR. In Italy, for example, it's different. Like, if you are an international medical graduate, if you come from abroad, you have to present all your documentation as always, right? And then there is the administrative work where someone looks at your grades, look at what you've studied. Oh, yeah, this is similar, anatomy, physiology, you know, whatever, internal medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do like 1 year, you work with a physician from there, an Italian physician. And he observes you, you know. He's like a mentor kind of, right? Supervises you.
Yeah, he gives you the check.
Yeah, exactly. So after a year that you are supervised by this physician, that they tell you to work with this physician, then if you've passed, you know, the year of supervision, then you are able to work autonomously, independently, yeah.
What you're saying, what I'm getting from this is you have to have balance.
Exactly.
You have to have balance to preserving the quality, mm-hmm. the standard of quality, the services that you're giving out, versus ensuring that people can, there are people that are able to have jobs and you are able to have that quality of standard because you have done the right steps, the verifications, everything.
Exactly.
Because we, some policymakers or some boards focus a lot on the quality, but it's the quality that makes them say, okay, we need to put a lot in, a lot of steps, a lot of multiple steps,
yeah.
because we want to have good quality.
Yeah.
And then those steps become barriers
mm-hmm.
for people.
Yeah, that's right. I think all those, like, for example, the Bridge Program, you know, all those are tools to make things more accessible, right? For example, I was just so happy, you know, so thrilled when I found out that there was the Bridge Program.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not something that it was offered for, you know, to me, like from outside, like I went and they say, oh, yeah, there's this program, you know, or it was just me looking into things, right? Like, okay, I need to do something more in, you know, like I know passing my exams is not enough because I pass all my exams and there's still the barrier that if you put me at the same level of an American graduate, well, programs prefer an American graduate, you know. But in order to do practice, you need to find a way, right? Externship. And those, they are reserved for people who are enrolled in a university. For example, if you are in the medical field, right, in the University of Minnesota, you have lots of externship open. But if you are an outsider, that you are not enrolled in anything at the U of M.
Do you feel like once you were trying to take the exams, once you were trying to talk to people to get clinical experience, do you think the resources that you needed were like sort of in one house or connected some way?
Many of the, like the observerships that I've got
mm-hmm.
were because someone met someone.
Yes.
So then, you know, a family member met a physician. Actually, my dad met this physician and, you know, in a family gathering, and she had high school students come abroad, you know, from abroad, you know, in a program and, you know, to be at the local school. And then she was used to foreigners, let's mm-hmm. say. So then she said, oh, but your daughter is a physician also. She should come and see patients with me. But I think it was a double thing. She was used to foreigners. She's a very open-minded person.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay, I'll work with the clinic where I work so she can come and do some observership.
That's so nice of her.
Yeah. And then that's how she opened her clinic, you know, or the clinic where she worked, because she's not the owner of the clinic.
Right.
But, you know, and I could work with different physicians in that clinic, you know. So that was, for example, one, you know, connection, someone who meets someone in a
right.
normal gathering, you know. And then others, I had to look, you know, for volunteers, opportunities that would be more towards the clinical side of things. For example, mm-hmm. I volunteer at this Lex Pregnancy Center as an advocate for women who are considering abortion. And that's something that I looked, you know, I had to search, like, okay, where can I volunteer it so that, because here in the United States, volunteering is very important.
Yes.
It's like, oh my gosh, if you don't do anything in your life, but you volunteer, you've made some success in
right.
the world, right? So then I said, okay, I'm going to go. If I don't find any more externships or services, then I'm going to volunteer in whatever. And then I said, okay, what do I like? And I found this pregnancy center near my home. And then I just wrote you know, to them, hey, I'm a physician from abroad, you know, if you need any help with anything. And of course, I couldn't practice, you know, as a physician because I'm not licensed to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But they say, but we can form you so you can be an advocate and, you know, for women and talk with them, go through them when they are undecisive of, you know, what to do when they are pregnant and in high risk, you know, high, like what you we call high risk pregnancy, you know, mm-hmm. women who are single. Or so that was very interesting, you know, and fun and nice, and I really enjoyed it. And then Googling, that's how also I found the Bridge program. Mm. So Google was my friend all the way. I don't know.
It's all of our friend.
Yes, yes. I don't know how like people did before when there was no internet. Like you had to talk with people and make connections, and because otherwise, now is everything. Thank God there's internet, right? Mm-hmm. So because then you can Google.
Last question that I have for you is: what do you think are the policy changes or programming? What do we need to do differently from a policy perspective or advocate perspective?
Yeah, well, I think programs like Bridge should be in all the states of United States.
Yes,
I not agree. Only yeah, not only Minnesota, and should be even like in every, I don't know, university or hospital. I, you know, like something like a year program or 9 month. You know, like where you have guidance on, for example, the social determinants of health of the community you're going to serve. You know, who are the people, right? And then some mentoring and some, you know, guidance on the American health system. So if they could open, like, I don't know, million Bridge programs in the United States, that would be awesome, like in my field, right? Mm-hmm. And that should be something that comes from each state, like from the government, let's say. Not, I don't know if it should come from universities, maybe state universities, right? But it should be a conjunct,
yes,
effort.
Collaborative.
Yeah, collaborative, definitely. From the state and the university or the hospitals. And because, yes, they're missing lots of opportunities of very qualified doctors.
Very qualified.
Who are very good. And they would be thrilled to do lots of wonderful things for the people here.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, if there could be something like Bridge, and I would say Bridge is enough. I mean, I don't think doing the step one and the step two, I don't think it's necessary. You know, as an international medical graduate, I don't think it's necessary. If you already have your degree and you can pass, you know, your grades and everything, and then some administrative work say, okay, yes, this title from this university is homologated here. So then just start a Bridge, you know, a Bridge program. And then you can do the third examination, you know, the one that every graduate of a medical school here does in the first year of residency, or if you want to do it before residency, you know, or part of the interview process for residency, you know, that's fine. But I don't think you need to, for international medical graduates, to prove that they already passed med school. I mean, I think it's obvious that they passed it because there is a degree, you know.
You've been such a great person to have on the podcast. So
no, thank
you so much. And
thank
I hope
you was wonderful.
Wish you best on all of your journey.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, really, for inviting me. It was a great thing.
Thank you for listening to Voices Unveiled. We invite you to actively participate in our mission to uplift these voices. Stay connected by subscribing to our Circles of Excellence newsletter. You can also find all the source materials on this episode on our website. The link to the website is in the show notes. If you're an international trained refugee or an immigrant looking for skill building opportunities and resources, please visit our website. Special thanks to Julie Sansulo, our dedicated sound engineer and editor, KFAI Program Director Miguel Vargas, who provided us with fantastic studio space and logistic assistance. Please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. Voices Unveiled is brought to you by KFAI Community Radio.